this is Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings. And we've got a great show with a great guest today as we celebrate World Refugee Day, which is not really a day to be celebrated. 80 million people have been displaced around the world due to hardships, due to violence, political activities in their countries. And today we've got a man who came to us from Argentina and has given the world so much great music. Gustavo Santaolalla is with us today, and we are happy to have him on the show. Welcome, Gustavo, to Border Crossings. And first of all, the question I want to ask you is, did you have to come in off of the vineyards, off your wine vineyards to come and do this? Did you leave those behind?
No, I was in Argentina for a little bit doing other things. I mean, like doing some recordings for our next album with Bajo Fondo, which is one of my projects that I'm involved with, and also doing some guest appearances in some friends' shows, and taking care of the business side of the vineyard. But actually, on this trip, I didn't have the opportunity to go and visit the vineyard, but that's coming soon.
Mm-hmm. And when do you have time for everything you're involved with? I mean, I just can't imagine. You're touring. You're in a part of a band, Bajo Fondo.
Bajo Fondo.
Yeah, and you're working on, I believe it was 100. You've produced 100 Latin Music Award albums, or 100 Latin albums in your career.
More than 100 albums of alternative Latin music. And by when I say alternative, I mean all sorts of music that are actually not kind of like the more usually music that you will listen on the radio. And that could be, you know, anything from rock, obviously, which the term alternative is usually associated with. But also it could be, you know, tango or folk or anything. I mean, I produce from a band like Café Tacuba to the Kronos Quartet. You know, I did an album dedicated to Mexican music called Nuevo with the Kronos Quartet, you know, which is a classic, contemporary classical quartet. So basically, you know, I think, you know, very interesting and very creative music. Yes, I have produced more than 100 albums.
And you've also worked with Juanes, who's one of the today's generation pop superstars in Latin music. And so is there a difference in how you approach, there must be a difference in how you approach, you know, you said a trio, a quartet, you know, smaller artists, and then Juanes is, you know, he's got the big stadium sound. So yeah. You must be, you know, doing things differently, I would assume.
Yes, I guess, you know, I always tried to try to find the sound and the identity of the artist also musically, sonically also. You know, I'm not, there's, you know, there's different type of producers, and I'm not putting anyone up or down. I'm just saying there's different kinds of. There's a kind of producer then which, you know, they usually imprint their sound to everything that they do, you know. And you have people, you know, like, you know, Phil Spector, or even, you know, Brian Eno or Daniel Lanois, which usually, I mean, their records have a very particular sound that you will associate with them. And then you have people like George Martin or Rick Rubin or people like that, that actually, you know, they really work on the sound of each particular artist, you know. Mm-hmm. That's more my school. So I try to maximize, you know, what I feel are the you know, the original things that an artist can bring to the table. That's where I try to put the accent, and I try to maximize those features. And of course, they're very different in a case like Juanes or Molotov or Julieta Venegas than the Kronos Quartet.
You know? And most of the Latin music, because here in the U.S., the English pop music is a lot of ballads and love songs, whereas the Latin music is dancing and partying and fun, and everything's up-tempo. I love the Latin music.
Well, you know, I think, I mean, to be honest, I think a little bit, I don't have anything against it, but I think it's a little bit stereotyping that I think, you know, for many years, when you said Latin, people thought about, you know, Mexican hats, congas and maracas, and you know, it's been thank God, I think, you know, for now, for the last 20 years, more and more and more, and obviously has to do with demographics and everything, but it's been an expansion of the concept of Latin, and especially in the world of cinema, for example, I mean, you know, with people like Alejandro González Iñárritu and Alfonso Cuarón and Guillermo del Toro, or, you know, actors like, you know, García Bernal and Diego Luna, and I mean, and, so, and now, you know, I mean, Pedro Pascal, you know, and we and I hopefully, you know, in my case, contributing from in the musical side of that, we could show that there's a whole vast spectrum of different nuances in what it is to be Latin. And it's not only about maracas, congas, and
no, much more, of course. But
I love them. I don't love them. we are also very, very famous for our ballads too. You know, I know you think Latin music, you know, and you think, you know, Bad Bunny, or you think, you know, things like that, which is true. I mean, you know, it's very danceable and stuff. But there is, you know, there is a really a big universe that is to be a Latin, you know.
You were imprisoned for, you know, speaking out.
Yeah, well, you know, it was the darkest, I think, decade in Argentina's history, which was in the 70s, you know, where we had a military junta in which 30,000 people disappeared at the hands of them, you know. So it was a decade of fear and really, truly darkness. I didn't belong to any political party. I wasn't into anything, you know, like, you know, drugs or anything that will result in me being, you know, apprehended. Or it was just for having long hair and playing an electric guitar and playing music that they considered that was something that will be subversive, you know. So actually, you know, the places like the Institute of Cinematography, for example, were closed. You know, obviously students were persecuted, and you end up in jail. I mean, I've never spent more than 3 days, but between probably 16 and 24, which is when I left Argentina, I was so many times detained, just like I said, for 24 hours, 3 days. They could never hold me because I didn't do anything wrong, but they had that prerogative that they could hold you supposedly to check your records, to see if you had anything, you know, in your records. But basically it was to make your life miserable. It was a point when I was around 20, 21 that I was pretty well known. You know, I had a very, very popular band. So actually when they were grabbing me and taking me, they knew who I was. You know, they even sang my song sometimes, you know, just to make me feel even worse. You know what I mean?
Yes, yes.
I was lucky enough that I never got hurt. And probably because I was kind of known. And so they didn't want to, you know, do that. But, you know, lots of my fellow Argentinians didn't have the same luck. And as I said, 30,000 people disappeared at the hands of the government. Actually, I'm working now on a movie called Norita, which is based on the life of Nora Cortinas, who is the head of the Madres de Plaza de Mayo. You know, we had this wonderful movement of mothers that actually went asking for, you know, where their sons or daughters were, you know, and they, incredibly, unbelievably enough, they even took three of those mothers and they killed three of those mothers too. I mean, you know, mothers that were asking for what's happening with their kids. So it was very, very, very dark. And thank God, I mean, you know, with all the problems that we go through, you know, in Latin America in general and in Argentina, still we live in a democracy right now. So it's a very, very different country. You know?
Yes, that was going to be a question I asked. Is, you know, I mean, I've heard horror stories about prisons in South America.
Correct.
And so I can't fathom that you would be actually in that environment as a successful.
No, I never got to that point because that would be probably like a next step. You know, I was, as I mentioned, I was always detained for just as I said, the worst was 3 days, you know, that I was in there. So that actually is when you are actually, you know, put in jail, you know, and those ones are really terrible places, you know.
And it sounds like you have always stayed true to what it is you love most. You've
Absolutely.
stuck with it. You didn't change. You didn't change who you were to conform. You did what you wanted to do the way you wanted to do it. And obviously it's working, you know, two Oscars, two Grammys, and all the other awards you've got.
Absolutely, you know, I think I'm always when I get asked now, you know, what will be my advice for some guy, you know, that's starting and you know in the business or in something, and I think it's something that can apply to anything. I always say that I truly believe in in discipline. You know, I believe in that concept of, you know, 80% perspiration, 20% inspiration. And I always like to quote Picasso. You know, he said this beautiful thing. He said, "I hope inspiration finds me working." You know, I'm not the kind of people that will sit down on an armchair, you know, thinking, you know, waiting to see, you know, if the little lamp goes on and gets, you know, inspiration. I believe in working, and you know, sometimes it comes right up, you know, immediately, and sometimes really you go and you work and nothing really comes, and finally your second day perhaps, boom, you know. So I truly believe in that. I believe that you have to find your own voice. Who are you? Your identity. Who are you going to be in what you want to do? And this applies to you being a musician, an actor, a cook, a furniture maker. Who's going to be? What is going to be your identity? You know. And once you find that, then you have to stick to it. You know. And you were saying you have to devote yourself to that. You know. Lots of times at the beginning, especially of the career, and then also when you become very popular, then you have the temptation of big offers and stuff, you know. And but I truly believe that at least for me, I think, you know, it's important to stay honest to what you think, you know. It's your vision and your, in this case, will be your sound, you know, your idea of how something should be expressed, either by yourself or by an artist that you're working with.
We're talking with Gustavo Santaolalla,
Yes.
and see, I got it for the third try, and he's with us today. And you're going to do a song for us, I understand.
Song I'm going to play, it's called the Apology Song, and this is a beautiful, I may say, a nice story, because I met this man through Guillermo del Toro, because we're working in another big project with him. And I always love great lyrics in Spanish and in English. And he introduced me to no one else but Paul Williams, you know. And this song was the first song I've been writing now with Paul for a while now. We have written a whole bunch of songs, but this is the first one we did. And this was for a Jorge Gutierrez animated film called Book of Life. And it's called the Apology Song. And it's a beautiful song that a guy, the protagonist, sings to a toro, to a bull, asking forgiveness for all the things that, you know, his family has done, because he doesn't want to be a torero, you know. He wants to be a musician. So so it's a really special song for me for many reasons. Apology Song.
We're going to listen to it right now, Gustavo Santaolalla. And this is the Apology Song here on Border Crossings.
Toro, I am humble, for tonight I understand your royal blood was never meant to decorate this sand. You suffer great injustice, so have thousands before you. I offer an apology, a one long overdue. I am sorry, Toro, I am sorry. Hear my song, and know I sing the truth. Although we were bred to fight, I reach for kindness in your heart tonight. And if you can forgive, and if you can forgive, love can truly live. And if you can forgive, and if you can forgive, love can truly live. I am frightened, but I use my final breath to tell you that I'm sorry that I sent this dance of death, of centuries of agony that to your heart we sent. Here and now with my amends, the senseless feeling ends. I am sorry, Toro, I am sorry. Hear my song, and know I sing the truth. Although we were bred to fight, I reach for kindness in your heart tonight. And if you can forgive, and if you can forgive, love can truly live. And if you can forgive, and if you can forgive, love can truly live. And if you can forgive, and if you can forgive, love will truly. I understand the royal blood was never meant to decorate this sand. You suffered great injustice, so have thousands before you. I offer an apology, a one-long overdue. I am sorry, I am sorry. Hear my song, I know I sing the truth. Although we were bred to fight, I reach for kindness in your heart. And if you can forgive, and if you can forgive, love can truly live. And if you can forgive, and if you can forgive, love can truly live. Yes, and if you can forgive, and if you can forgive, love, love.
Border Crossings, that's the apology song. We're talking with a multi-Academy Award, multi-Grammy winner who's on our show today, an international star. As we are celebrating the month of June, we're celebrating World Refugee Day, which is on June 20th. And Gustavo Santaolalla is here as our guest today. And it's a pleasure to have you here. Now, there must be, you've also written and compose music for TV. You know, you've got something HBO, you've got something Netflix. So tell me about the writing. When you're writing for a singer, performer, and you're writing for a TV show, the process must be different.
It is. Although, you know, we're always talking about story. It's always about storytelling in a way. You know, we're always telling stories. So that thing, that is in common, you know, to everything. And you know, you play that role of telling a story in different ways. When I'm writing a song, of course, I am in charge of, you know, doing the lyrics, especially, you know, if I'm writing in Spanish, you know, and the music and stuff. If an artist, I'm producing an artist, then my task as a producer is to try to see, you know, how I can interpret that song and how can I make that story shine, you know. And you know, a song usually, you know, is composed of, you know, verses and choruses and bridges and stuff, and really depends how you put all that together, how the story is going to be told. Usually verses create tension and choruses release. So sometimes, you know, you once you know this, you know, you can say, okay, you know, why don't we do one more verse before we hit the chorus, so we create more tension? Or why don't we start the song with the chorus, and then we usually the chorus have the what we call the song tag, you know, which is, you know, all we are saying is give peace a chance, you know? That's the tag. Then you know, you go into the rant of saying, you know, this and this and that, you know, and then you go back to that chorus, right?
Yes, yes.
So, and in a movie, you know, or in a series, you know, you also develop your themes that way. When you're going to present a theme, when you're going to step with the music to actually propose the story and not interrupt. You know, music is very delicate when you're working with image. And especially if you're working in dramatic, and when you work, I have the luck to work with some unbelievable directors in the film world, you know, Alejandro González Iñárritu, Ang Lee, Walter Salles. I mean, amazing, amazing directors. And you know, when you have such incredible directors, they manage the dramatic scenes in such a way that usually in your music, you know, sometimes, you know, you don't want music because something dramatic could be turned into melodramatic, you know, and then
yes, yes,
it ruins it, you know. Sometimes you wait until kind of like the scene perhaps finishes, and then you come in with the music, and then kind of like emotionally supports that and then enhances even what you just felt, you know. So it's very, very delicate. I'm always trying to be very delicate with the use of music. I always said that, you know. Obviously, there are genres like animation in which you need more music and more music. But in the other type of movies, and even in series, you know, when there's music and music and music and music and music, usually after 10 minutes, music becomes irrelevant because you just don't hear it anymore, you know? So you need those spaces. You need those moments of pause. So when the music comes in, then it really hits you, you know? At least, I mean, that's my criteria, you know? That's the way I like to work.
Well, you know, it's great that you can be so versatile because you've also written for video games. You talked about animation and you know, The Last of Us, the video game is, you know, to write for that. That's a big challenge too.
Absolutely, but once again, we're telling a story. I mean, one of the things with the video game that was really interesting for me was I'm always, you know, I'm still very interested in anything that I think music can play a role. I would like to be involved, you know. That's why I'm working on a musical now, and anything that music can play a role, and obviously, video games is one of those things. So I'm not a gamer. I'm a terrible gamer, but my son, our son, used to be when we started with The Last of Us, which was almost, it was 10 years ago, actually. He was in his mid-teens year, and he was a great player. And I always enjoy watching him play, you know. I didn't play, but I'd like to, you know, sit down sometimes for a while and watch him play. And I always thought, you know, if sometime somebody comes in and does something that will connect with the player in an emotional level, you know, aside of the combat, survival, you know, the fighting, the killing, but something that will connect in a more deep emotional level, it's going to revolutionize the
yes, this. Yes, yes, yes. That would be a great thing.
And that's what happened with The Last of Us. So after the two Oscars, you know, I was approached by several companies, one a big company, and it was more of the same to me. I had this very clear in my mind, you know, that I didn't want to do. So the offer me was no, until I met Neil Druckmann. Neil is the creator of The Last of Us. And when he told me the story, you know, I said, I mean, this is exactly, and also he had that in mind. And then when we learned that there were lots of people that were crying playing the game, because there's a few moments in the game that are really very, very strong, you know, and emotivos. And for me, when they turned this now with the addition of Craig Mazin, you know, the guy that created Chernobyl, you know, hook up with Neil, and they created now, they sort of recreated this for HBO as a series, you know. I knew I had the feeling that people were, even people that perhaps didn't like video games, that they will embrace this, because once again, it's a great story. And I always felt that I wasn't writing music for a video game. I was writing music for a great story. And a great story, you can do it as a video game, as a puppet show, as an animation movie, as, any Shakespearean, tale. You can do it, in any way, because it's such a great story. So I always approach things from that angle, not so much about thinking about, okay, I'm writing for a video game, I'm writing for a movie. No, I'm writing for a story, for, these characters, these events that are taking place, this particular drama, this particular conflict. Mm-hmm. And that's the inspiration for the music.
Are you going to do another song for us? Do you have one? The next one?
The next one is an instrumental song, and it's one that was featured in the movie The Motorcycle Diaries. And it's a piece called De Ushuaia a La Quiaca. I'm not going to try to make you say the...
yeah, please don't.
But the Ushuaia is the city that is at the bottom of Argentina, very close to Antarctica, in Tierra del Fuego. And La Quiaca is in the border of Bolivia. So it's basically going, from the very south to the very north. And it was a project that I did with a dear friend of mine, Leon Gieco, another great artist. We went through the country recording rural musicians. This was in 1984. Taping and recording musicians. And that trip inspired this piece called De Ushuaia a La Quiaca. And funny enough, Walter Salles, picked up this piece for The Motorcycle Diaries, which was also the story of two people, Ernesto Guevara, before he became Che, going to Latin America, looking somehow for their identity, And so he didn't know, when Walter picked up De Ushuaia a La Quiaca for the movie, he didn't know about that it was also about a trip, of two friends. So this is De Ushuaia a La Quiaca.
Gustavo Santaolalla is our guest, and that is from a movie. What's the name of the song? I'm not going to try it. So.
De Ushuaia a La Quiaca.
All right. Well, beautiful music. Now, you have won Academy Awards for your music that has been in Brokeback Mountain and Babel, and you've done so many other great things in your career. What was it like to hear your name called for the Oscars, to be sitting in the audience and
unbelievable. It was something really, I always said that there's all the awards, you know, the Grammys, the BAFTAs, all the awards, you know, going low. But the Oscars somehow, you know, it's like a totally different beast. It's the heaviest award in every sense. It weighs 4.5 kilos, you know.
Wow.
It's heavy, really. And it was something really, I always felt since I was a kid that, you know, I was and always very grateful about it. You know, I felt that I had a gift, you know, that I could do something that could connect with people, you know. Mm-hmm. And I've been always also aware that I would like to use that for to affect people in a positive way. And, you know, with all my imagination, I could have never thought that something like that would have happened to me, really, you know. Mm-hmm. In a way, you know, to be honest, in that first Oscar, I felt it like it was an award to my career. Anyway, of course, it was about Brokeback Mountain, but I felt it that it was culmination of so many years of work and so many years of dedication to what I do and with, you know, with passion and with love and also being aware that the award wasn't to me, it was to my work, and my work is the result of not only me, but, you know, many people that work with me and also that have influenced me, and that, you know, so that's what took me there, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully they'll give you a Lifetime Achievement Award at the Latin Grammy Awards. I mean, I think you've certainly earned that with over 100 albums. Where are the Oscars? Are you got the awards behind you on the table? I see a bunch of things sitting behind you.
No, really, no. You know, for many years, I have them sort of distributed, and some of them, it is the Oscars, I have them, you know, believe it or not, secluded in a closet, you know,
because I thought they'd be on the dashboard of your cars. Will you?
No, they're too powerful. You know what I mean? They're kind of invade the whole thing. I mean, you know, or you put it in which I've seen. I saw the other day a thing with David Byrne. I love it. He had it in a bookshelf with millions of other things and stuff, just sort of like lost in there, you know. So something like that. I've heard people have it in the bathroom, you know. You know, it is. I mean, you feel that you have to you know, do something with it that is kind of odd, but to put it somewhere like that in your living room, you know, or in the shelf, you know, just it's just a little bit too much. But you know, I think to be honest. At the risk to sound very corny, but I have them in my heart. That's where I carry them. You know, that's where I carry them.
Well, but, that's most important. You know, I mean, and so with all of the awards that you've won, and all of the achievements you've had, what has been your greatest accomplishment? What's been the highlight of your career so far?
I think it's yet to come.
Spoken like a true producer.
No, in a way, I mean, I think it would be, in a way, I think it's the combination of what I'm doing right now with everything that I've done before. So in a way, it's an accumulation of things. I couldn't just point out to one thing, you know what I mean?
But
it's
sure.
The bulk of everything that I've done and the continuation of it, you know. For me, it's been amazing the fact that I started, you know, with my band in Argentina when I started making records when I was 17 years old, and I started as an artist and as a producer because there were no producers of that type of music, you know, in Argentina. Mm-hmm. And I was very interested in the art of making records, which is to produce, you know. Mm-hmm. So I started making records, and I was lucky enough to become very popular with that band. And I always, through my life and my career, I always had this moment of connection with people as an artist, then as a producer, then as a film composer, then as a video, now, you know, as a also TV or, you know. So I've always had this incredible lack or, you know, the possibility to connect. Not, so I don't have to like leave off. I love everything that I've done, mm-hmm. but at the same time, it's not that I have to thrive and live on from that, you know what I mean? That of mm-hmm. that memory or of that, you know, I live with all that accumulated in me, but also with what I'm doing now, with mm-hmm. what projects that I'm involved in and working, you know, that's what makes me feel alive. And I think in a way, that's the accomplishment mm-hmm. on pushing me, you know, to not stay in a comfort zone, to try to, you know, it's there's a nice story. When I came to this country in 1978 or around that, I was a little bit disappointed with the music scene at the time, because I was coming from Argentina, where, you know, you could go to jail just for playing that music. And, mm-hmm. and by the time I came here, which was 78, you know, the rock has become very corporative, you know, and it was bands like Styx, Kansas, Boston, you know. And I was really kind of, you know, oh man, you know, I remember, I mean, you know, the Woodstock days and all that, you know, that movement and stuff. But then it was all this new thing coming, you know, punk mm. and wave, and this thing that was coming to really say, you know, let's get, you know, this is wrong. This is not rock, you know. We have to regain the power of, you know, of that the music has. So I embraced that, and I had my new wave punk band, you know, and but then, you know, I started writing all this new music and throwing it around, right? And I didn't get response from anybody. Only one guy from a publishing company, you know, called me and said, you know, yeah, I want to meet with you and stuff. So we got together, we listened to the tape, I play some songs, and the guy said something to me. He said, you know, your songs are great, you have a great voice, your song is fantastic, but in every song there's a moment that you seem to hit the wrong note. You seem to hit a wrong chord, you know? And I said, well, you know, I know that probably we're not going to work together because of this, but I want to tell you that I take that as a compliment, because I am looking for that point of inflection, that moment of tension and thing. That's, you know, what I like. Then cuts the scene, and 30 years later, I'm at a Neil Young tribute thing, you know, big gala, and somebody from the industry say, come on, I want to introduce you to this man. And it was this guy, I remember. Perfect, you know? And I was going to do something, we're going to do something with Bajo Fondo and one of the artists that he had in his publishing company. But he didn't know. He knew me now as the guy of the Oscars, right? Mm-hmm. You know? So, you know, introduced me. I said, oh, yeah, Gustavo, yeah, you won the Oscars. I said, no, you don't remember, but I know you. You know, you used to have an office at this place. You told me something that I never forgot. And the guy was white, you know, like, what did I tell this guy? You know, what? I said, no, you told me something, you know, you told me that, you know, that my songs are all nice and good, but at a certain point, I seem to hit the wrong note, the wrong chord. And, you know, I said, you know what happened to me when I met Anne Hathaway, one of the actresses of Brokeback Mountain, said, you know, when I heard the music of Brokeback, the first theme, and, you know, you start thinking, and then you hit that dissonance. I went, this guy is great. I love this guy. And I said, you know, the full circle, man. Now people love that wrong note.
You know? Yeah, exactly. You could say to him, the two Oscars, this is what the one bad note got me.
Yeah, and I never I wasn't resentful or anything. Actually, he was the only guy that actually paid attention to me. So I always kept a nice feeling about the guy. So we really had a great laugh. And actually, he looked after the guy that came with his wife, because he said, you know, he couldn't stop talking about this and stuff. Because I can think the guy said, I had a guy that won two Oscars and I just let him go. I said, you played the wrong note.
Gustavo Santaolalla is our guest. And we're going to have one more song from you, I believe.
One more song. And this song is, you know, I come from the rock world. That's where I come from, you know, and from rock in our language, because there was a moment that, you know, in Argentina, at the very beginning, around the British invasion here, we also had kind of that in Argentina, and we used to write our songs in, you know, kind of a fake English, you know, and stuff. But then we realize, no, you know, we can't. We have to sing in our language. I mean, we live in Argentina. We have things to say. So we started writing in Spanish. And then, you know, I felt, listen, we need to also play in Spanish. And we started to add our instruments and things. So this is a song, a rock song in Spanish, and it's called Ando Rodando.
All right, Gustavo Santaolalla, right here on Border Crossings.
Rodando, rodando, por mi camino buscando, puertas abiertas, por señas que me hagan ver, parques, bares, camas, trenes y lugares, los cielos, infiernos, todo me da igual si no sé, si no sé para qué vivo, si en el mar se muere el río de la tierra prometida, solo sacar la respuesta. Voy a interrogar a cada ser viviente a ver si sale quién es el que nos miente. ¿Cuándo? Rodando por mi camino buscando puertas abiertas, señas que me hagan ver, parques, bares, camas, trenes y lugares, cielo, infierno, todo me da igual si no sé, si no sé para qué vivo, si en el mar se muere el río de la tierra prometida, solo me quedan heridas, pero de esta voy a sacar la respuesta.
Border Crossings, one of the great composers from Latin America, from the world for that matter, a man who's given us so many great songs. And that's the thing, when you have such a body of work, not everybody knows, oh, that's from Gustavo. Oh, that's from Gustavo. You make these songs and they're out there, but you don't get the acknowledgement for all the great music you've created, which, you know, I mean, that's okay. You love what you're doing. You're passionate about it.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny because it was a moment that it was really confusing for people, because I could tell that when I was playing with Bajo Fondo, for example, you know, nobody thought that the guy there in Bajo Fondo is the same guy that won the Oscars, or the people that knew me because of the film music that I did didn't know that I was the Juanes producer, you know. So it was a really, but now I think a little bit more people are starting to connect the dots, you know. Mm-hmm. Now they see, okay, this guy actually does a little bit of everything, you know. Mm-hmm. He produces a lot, he does his own music, he does music for films, he does music for video games, you know. So
Your beard longer when you got the Oscars? I think I recall the acceptance speech.
This came with the enclosing of the pandemia, you know.
Yeah.
COVID, result of
Yeah. Well, we survived together. You know, everybody survived the pandemic, which was not easy to do.
Absolutely, man. Terrible time. But, you know, here we are. You know,
here we are. Here we are.
A proof of resilience.
Mm. And so, Gustavo Santaolalla, what would be several artists that you want to collaborate with that you haven't? Because you have worked with everybody. So who's left on your checklist?
No, there's too many. There's too many, and I don't want to.
Pick three. Pick your top three collaborations.
But, you know, I can go really wild and like Paul McCartney, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I can make it even harder for you or easier. They can be dead or alive. Who would you like to work with?
Oh, David Crosby. Mm-hmm. That was easy. And Atahualpa Yupanqui.
Hmm. All right. Well, you never know. I'm sure with your name and reputation, it's very likely that those people will be calling you very soon. And I understand also that you you grew up familiar with the Voice of America in Argentina.
Well, as you know, it's a program that's been since I was a kid. So it's not that, you know, I listened to it and stuff, but I was familiar that I actually had a friend that actually his father was into short radio and stuff, you know, had all that stuff. They always had it. And that was, you know, the chances that I had. So I knew about it since I was a kid. And for me, it's a great honor, really, to be in such a media that can go to every corner of the world, you know, which is like every artist's dream, to be able to communicate with people all over the world. I've been lucky enough that with what I do to have traveled extensively the world, although, of course, there's places that I haven't been that would love to be. But
where are they? Name some.
This is incredible, but I mean, I've been, you know, in India and in China and Japan, all the Middle East, but I have never been in Australia and New Zealand.
Oh, and how about Africa?
Africa, I've been in Morocco and in Morocco.
Wow. Do you have favorite places you like to play? I mean, fond memories of certain countries?
I really like, I think, you know, I mean, it's hard for me to say because I had incredible, great times everywhere, but I would say Greece, I would say Spain, I would say obviously in Latin America, you know, Colombia and Chile and Mexico, obviously. But, you know, it's one of the great places is South Korea. I mean, you know, the South Korean people are very, very, they're a little bit, they're for me kind of like a little bit of connection with Latin people. I don't know why, but I feel like that. There's a Korean community in Argentina, an important Korean community in Argentina. But but for whatever reason it is, I mean, I play Japan, I play China several times, and I love it there too. But South Korea, it's a very, very, it's a very, very hot, the audience there.
Yes, yes. I just imagine, you know, you go to China as an immigrant from Argentina, now living in America, that's kind of, it gives you a different perspective, because in Argentina you had one view, and now in America you have another view, and here you are in China.
Totally. I mean, and the cultural shock can be amazing, because I remember one particular trip that I went from here to Shanghai, and then which is, you know, sort of a China in a very, I don't know, you know, Western vibe too, because it has all these buildings and this, you know, vibe, but it's tremendously ordered, you know, everything in total order, you know, the people. Mm-hmm. You don't move, you know, everything is in their place. And then from there, I went to India. The shock from there, actually, you know, to India was one of the strongest one I experienced in my life.
Mm. You know, wow. Big difference between China and India. Although there's 1.5 billion people in both places, but
unbelievable.
So how can people get a hold of you? How can people find what's going on in your life and in your career if they want to find you on social media or on the web? Where do they go? What do they do?
Well, they go to my webs. I mean, they go to my my YouTube channel, and also I have Instagram, and I have Facebook, which probably you can find
Just by searching your name, and that's it?
Searching my name, absolutely. Yes,
which is Gustavo Santaolalla.
Aya, Santaolalla.
Santaolalla.
Yes.
I got it right at the end. Well, thank you so much for being on. Do you have a message you want to send out to our worldwide audience that are tuning in and very excited to see you?
Well, the message will be that I really hope that we can find a way to empathize more one with each other and to make this world, make justice to this beautiful planet that we have, and that we can find a way to live in peace.
Gustavo Santaolalla, who is our guest today.
Bravo.
Bravo. Well, got to end strong, right? It's how you finish. It's not how you start. It's how you finish. Thank you for being on the show. What an honor and a pleasure to meet you and a thrill to speak to you. And thank you for watching as well. This is Border Crossings. You're watching VOA TV.